The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're going to be discussing 1969's Destroy She Said, Marguerite Duras' directorial debut at the tender age of 55. We've got someone filling in today. Ilya is on vacation. Say hello, Michael.
Hello, it's really nice to be back here in the Loose Cannons studio.
You may remember Michael from such podcasts as Come Drink With Me. And then the rest of the regular crew is here. It's Ruben talking, of course, and Patrick. And
Patrick. Hi, this is Patrick. Back again, finally.
Oh, yeah.
A bit of a break in Loose Cannons world.
Yeah. Which you may or might not notice in release dates, but we definitely notice, and you'll probably notice in how good we are at podcasting. We probably lost it.
Lost all momentum.
If we ever had it.
Yeah. If we had it, we had a rhythm.
Water
weird.
Between that.
Completely lost that rhythm.
You guys had the rhythm method going.
Yeah. Now we're going to have a podcast, baby.
I was trying to make a like tied in Beau Travail rhythm of the night joke, but it's not there.
No, sorry, Ruben. Stepping all over your punchlines.
No,
here.
It's not
going deep in the Loose Cannons bag.
Never
there
came,
for a
never
joke.
Came together.
It's true. Callbacks.
So this is my pick. So I'll be giving us a little synopsis, which is a bit difficult to do because it's not a very linear plotty movie, but basically there are a couple people at this sort of hotel resort taking a break from their jobs/lives. Two guys who are both professors, one named Thor and one named Stein. Stein is married to a much younger woman. Or, sorry, not Stein. Thor is married to a much younger woman that was in Stein's class. And there they meet a woman their age named...
Elisa.
Yeah. No. Elisa is Thor's wife. The woman they meet there.
Yeah.
Is,
there's Alyssa and Elisa.
Yeah.
They keep calling her Elisa. They have almost the same name. That'll make it much less confusing.
Isn't this part of what happens in the movie? Like, we start not being able to tell people apart, or people start acting like one another?
Okay, but I'm not done with the plot. So, they're mostly sitting around talking, and Elisa, is having like these dreams that she talks about sometimes, and she's also seems like kind of worried about her husband coming to the hotel. Like, she doesn't really want to see him, and then he shows up at the end, and then they have a weird long conversation, and that's pretty much it. So, Patrick, what did you think of the movie?
I hated it. I thought it was incredibly boring. I thought the lighting was bad, and I could not find anything to like about it.
Yeah. Basil?
I did not hate it. I found things to like about it, but overall I was still, I don't know, a few of the things sort of bothered me. They seemed like I could tell right away that it was based on a play, and the kind of like chattiness of it. At a certain point, I found it a little difficult to follow, and that, I don't know, I thought that the forest metaphor was sort of, like, on the nose, and I kind of got it right away, and I felt like if the movie had been shorter, it wouldn't have really lost that much, but... Overall, I would say I slightly disliked it, but I guess I'm hoping that once we talk about it, I'll have more interesting opinion.
Michael?
My turn? I don't even know if I liked it or disliked it. I don't know what the hell was going on in this movie. So, maybe a little bit on the side of slightly dislike then, because I could not follow what was going on for large portions of the movie. I had to start and stop the movie, I think, about 4 or 5 times because I fell asleep several times.
Alright.
Yeah. So, yep.
I pretty strongly dislike the movie as well. And I feel kind of bad. I didn't, I watched about half of one of her movies called India Song that I really liked. And for some reason, I don't know why, maybe just based on the cover art, just assumed that Destroy, She Said was a later film. And it's actually, I watched 3 of her films in one day. Well, I finished India Song and watched Destroy, She Said and Natalie Grainger. And there's like a real clear development as a director, because if you watch those films in the order in which they were actually released. And so I thought we were watching a later one of her films and that it would be better, although I mean they're all sort of the same thing, it's just the other ones do it better in my opinion.
So they're also just people sitting around talking in, like, a single location for a very long period of time.
In India Song, they're not even talking. They're, it's narration going over the... They're just, like, dancing and walking around, and then there's just narration running throughout the whole film.
Well, at least there's dancing in that one.
yeah.
I was hoping that somebody would dance in this one or do something other than just sit there and go...
They played cards.
I feel like I'm not even myself anymore. That's true, they do play cards.
So
very boringly.
I did dislike this one, but like, so I guess my point of comparison is Last Year at Marienbad. Bad. Has anyone seen that
movie? I have not seen it.
Yeah. Me? Yeah. Nope. Yeah, she worked on that movie, didn't she? With Renee?
I don't think so. She did Hiroshima Mon Amour, but Last Year at Marienbad was Alain Robbe Grier, I believe.
I thought she was involved in it in some way.
Can we start the Googling portion already?
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, someone Google it.
This
is not the Googling portion. This is the speculating things that we could easily use Google to prove.
Right.
Like how long a movie is, or whether or not Miyazaki's son made a film, and what the name of the film was.
Oh no, I knew the answer to that.
So that's my point of comparison, and the reason why I don't hate this movie and just sort of dislike it, because I don't think that it does a very good job with what it's trying to do compared to the other two films of hers that I saw, is that I do hate Last Year at Marienbad, and it's because I kind of feel like it's just like rich people laying around, like talking about their problems. But there's an element of, I wouldn't go so far as to say a satire, but sort of goofiness to Marguerite Duras films, that like there's always this sort of sense that these people are sort of ridiculous for not, in this case, like going into the forest, or that and Natalie Grainger, there's this salesman who keeps coming by to the two women's house, played by Gerard Depardieu, like, I guess kind of representing capitalism, and they never take him seriously. and like they literally at one point say you're not a salesman, and I think they mean it kind of like you're not a very good salesman, but he tries to like prove it literally, like pulling out his like business card and like opening his briefcase and showing them his wares.
I mean that sounds kind of interesting. I kind of wish I had watched more of her films the way you did, because I feel like I got nothing from this movie at all.
I mean, I basically got nothing from this movie too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll get to Basil, who got something from this movie. I
sure did.
But, I'm just saying that, like, in comparison to last year in Marion Bad, which really kind of feels like an entire movie that's white people problems and, like, takes itself super seriously as far as those white people problems goes, that there's, like, an element of farceness to this film that I appreciate in comparison to that one.
Farceness in the sense like the acting or just the scenario?
Yeah, the scenario. There's just like a bit of a, like, you know, the, like, for instance, the, you know, you get this kind of sense that the woman is worried about her husband coming back for some reason. Like, she doesn't want to see her husband. She's got like this like pained, anxious face like a lot of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shows up and he's just kind of bewildered and confused, and you're like, why was she worried about this guy coming?
He seems like, he seems pretty normal. Yeah. He's the most normal person in the, like, whole movie.
And like the whole time he's kind of just like looking back and forth in the conversation. He's like the person who, it's like someone's talking about something they totally don't understand, but they're trying to pretend like they're part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And kind of nodding the head. And it's not like, like, I didn't laugh, but I still thought it was like a little bit, in a way, like, you know,
that was the most enjoyable part of the movie for me. That was the most enjoyable part for me, just because it was kind of humorous in a way. But
yeah, I thought there was a funny, like, a shot that I really liked that was both like super funny and also sort of like sad, where it cuts to Alyssa during that conversation, and she's sitting, and there's this weird poster of just like a bunch of guns pointed at her head.
Yeah.
And she looks really sad, and then just like a, I don't know, a juxtaposition in the middle of this like long conversation made me laugh.
Yeah, I honestly missed that poster because I had just kind of checked out at that point. Mm-hmm. I don't know, for some reason I saw the beginning of it and I was like, oh, okay, it's kind of a cool setup, it's kind of like minimal and it's gonna be kind of, you know, slow like that, and I was like, all right, I'm kind of ready for that, and then it was just like the conversations they were having just didn't exactly make sense, but they also didn't present anything that I found interesting at all. Like, it did sound just a bit like they were saying kind of the same thing over and over again, and I was just like, I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. So it got to a certain point where I was just like, I'm like halfway kind of watching this and not really caring, and I guess this is a bad movie for that to happen, because you know, it's, I guess you do have to kind of watch what they're saying, but I couldn't engage myself with these people because I feel like the acting was so bland. And I guess
I think that was a pretty,
I mean, all of this is intentional, but it makes sense that it's not your thing.
If it's intentional though, like I hated that. I if you're gonna make people act bland,
I don't,
like,
know if I would go that
at
far.
Least give me something not. To look at. But I felt that, like, this film was lit so poorly, like, you could, I don't know, it just looked so bad.
I definitely think the way the film looks is definitely a legitimate complaint, and something that Natalie Granger and India Song definitely have over it.
And
I thought there were some pretty cool shots, actually.
Well, it felt like an early effort, since you say that you said it was her first film as a director.
Her first directorial film. She'd written a number of films before this.
Yeah, it seems like a first film. It seems like she's, like, you know, making her amateur mistakes as a director. And I'm like, okay, fine. That's, you know, it's really boring and all that. But I'm like, if it's your first film, whatever. You're allowed to make a bad movie. But I feel like she did make a bad movie here.
She appreciates your allowance.
I'm not engrossed at all in this, but I don't I'm not gonna, you know, begrudge her that much. I'm like, all right, first film, whatever. Get it out of your system now.
So, while this film doesn't sort of work for me, I don't agree with you that you can sort of say, like, people can't, or it's, like, bad to make a sort of inert film that's intentionally, like, difficult and, like, hard to get into and doesn't provide any of the normal trappings for people to, like, put themselves into it. Like, our typical expectations for acting and how dialogue should work. I didn't, but it seemed like Basil was about to say something about it, though.
Oh, I was just gonna say that, like, when the husband shows up at the end of the movie, he gives a pretty normal performance that feels like you would something you would see in a regular movie. So, like, at that point, I felt, like, 100% confident that everyone else's acting was, like, the fact that they were all speaking in these weird monotones that had, like, no emotional energy to their voice was, like, a super conscious decision. And that, I thought that, like, that his performance kind of changes over the course of the conversation and he starts talking to them, which gave me a sense that kind of this, like, hotel, which I think is also sort of a sanitarium, like,
yeah.
Is,
I was, like, gonna say that.
Yeah, is, like, just sort of, like, taking away these people's personalities, that the lure of, like, being outside the world and, like, being divorced from your personness is, like, so strong that he's almost by the end of the conversation, he's like, well, maybe we should stay. Maybe it's not so bad if we just stay for a day or two. And then his wife's like, no, we should go.
I was pretty convinced about halfway through that these people were all mental patients and this was just a psychiatric facility of some kind.
They make oblique references to that throughout the movie. Like,
yeah, Elizabeth.
There's one point where, yeah, and also, like, I think Max is like, someone asks why they were there and he's like, oh, I don't know, we just thought it was a normal hotel. Like, they just, like,
yeah,
checked themselves in thinking that they were, like, going to a vacation place, and it turns out that they're checking themselves in the other sense.
Yeah. And what was I going to say? Elizabeth, she makes pretty blatant references to having some kind of psychiatric issues going on with respect to her child and that doctor, which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell what exactly had happened with that story that she kept telling.
It seemed like her daughter had died. That was
that was actually
the hardest part for me to follow too. Like, I
found a nice review on the internet, and it says that an unsuccessful childbirth.
Yeah, I found reviews on the internet too that were very forgiving of this movie and were like really kind of like,
it's not the word I would use.
Well, no, they don't make it out to be forgiving, but they were like high on the movie and they were like, yes, it does a very good job, and there's a really tense scene where they play cards, and I was like, that scene was anything but tense.
It was,
I didn't
tense
get
to
anything
me
from that scene.
I thought it was tense.
Boom. Rested.
Like, that's one of the things that I really like, actually, one of the few moments that I was, like, super into, because of the way it's shot. Like, it's such a long shot on Elizabeth, and, like, the other characters are just, like, relentlessly interrogating her. Like, they just keep asking her questions about her life, and we never see them except for, like, the cards in their hands, and for me, it felt, like, super kind of claustrophobic and creepy. And, like, then, like, they just break the rules. They just, like, take these cards, and they're like, it's no big deal. And she's like, oh, but that's not how you're supposed to play. And they're like, no, we don't know how to play. Just keep playing. It's fine. And she seems super anxious, but then just, like, has to go along with it. I was really uncomfortable doing that. I was like, man, they're being, like, really creepy bullies right now.
Well, didn't they say something like, oh, it doesn't matter, Stein wins.
Right.
He just wins. And he was kind of, I don't know, it seemed like he was kind of the ringleader of the group, like he was taking some sort of authoritarian position within the sort of that main trio.
Yeah, he's like kind of orchestrating things, and there's like a weird thing where he's sort of like this push and pull with him and Alyssa, where he's like sometimes pushing her towards Max to like talk about it, but then other times, like there's that other kind of creepy shot where they're talking in the forest and he's just got his arms like kind of wrapped around her.
Yeah. And she says something weird in that scene. I wrote it down, but I'm looking for it. She says something like, "Oh, tell me what to see," or something like that. It was very weird. Or like, there was a lot of scenes where the other two were asking Stein, like, what do I see or what do I feel? And he was telling them, you know, oh, well, you should feel this or you should see this. And then they're like, oh, okay, sure, why not?
I'm glad you guys remember so much of the dialogue from this, because it's been, I don't know, like a few weeks since I watched it, and I can barely remember any of it because it just had that little of an impact on me.
I don't remember it nearly as well as these guys do.
Do what now?
I said I don't remember it nearly as well as these guys do.
Well, we both watched it in the last like day.
So. I finished it this morning.
Much better than we do. Because I'm just like, yeah, I lot of this.
I watched the first half hour like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then I rewatched it from the beginning, and that actually made it a lot easier. I was like, because the first time I saw it, I was almost immediately lost as far as the conversation goes. I was like, I don't know who these people are. Who are they in relation to each other? It was just like, everything's just washing over me. I mean, it probably doesn't help that it's French, so it's already sort of a struggle to like kind of keep up and be active with reading the subtitles and whatnot, but, especially for such a like chatty movie, but rewatching it the second time is a little bit easier. And also the sort of like, I was hoping someone else would have an answer since I don't, but there are a lot of like pretty apparent references to the Holocaust, and like that Stein and Max Thor both survived it somehow, and that they're like part of this retreat could be like them just retreating from the reality of trying to deal with it. Like they both mention being Jewish several times, and given their age, you know, they definitely would have been alive in 44. And at one point towards the end of the movie, Stein even says that to the new husband guy, that they're both German Jews, which would definitely imply either that they hid out and that's how they survived, or that they were in concentration camps and somehow managed to survive those.
There's a part at the end where I think there's like gunfire or something happening in the forest outside before they leave. I thought that, I didn't understand what that meant either, but maybe that has something to do with what you're talking about, like the war being outside and then retreating from it in a way.
Yeah, when I first talked about it, that's what I was actually referring to, that I thought, like, as soon as everyone kept referring to the forest, I was like, oh, okay, the forest represents the outside world, the real world, and they don't want to go out there, and that, like, I was like, okay, so this can end either one of two ways. The one I anticipated was that they were going to, like, finally get it together and then go out into the forest, and that would be the end of the movie, but the movie, does the opposite, which is that they're like, no, we're not going to go to the forest, but then the forest is coming to them.
Well, were they both Jews, though? Because I know that Stein says it at the beginning, and then the other two say it at the end. I wasn't sure if that was that Max and Stein were both Jewish, or if Stein was, and they were just assuming his personality, because he was sort of overtaking the other two in that way.
I could be wrong. I thought for sure that at one point Stein said that Thor was also Jewish, but I could have.
It's hard to tell if that's
it is.
If that's actually a truthful statement or if it's just something else.
Right. I also thought the sound design was super funny, like how often there's just like an insane amount of chirping birds to like make fun of the idea of like this idyllic setting, because just how often it's just like birds like forever every time they're outside.
Did you like the constantly playing tennis game that we never see?
Yeah, that too.
There's just a tennis game going on in the background of like almost every shot that we never see the people playing tennis. Just
and that, I'm sure that was intentional, but I think it would be funny if there was just like people playing tennis and they wouldn't stop, so they just made it part of the movie. They're just like, alright, we'll just put tennis sounds in the background of every scene. Like, it's like there's a tennis match going on. It's deep. Put it in there. I have had that problem before in movies where you like something's going on in the background and you're just like, just record room tone with that going on. It's just part of the movie now.
Just ADR it.
But yeah, even like the final scene with the doctor, they're like sitting near that open window and the birds are still there, just like way quieter, and I was like, she's really like just birds all the time. And just like the idea, I don't know, for some reason I found that funny, because like when people think of that sound, they think of it as being peaceful, but it's like so constant throughout the movie that I was like, it made me feel super anxious that I was like, these birds will not stop chirping.
From this review that I did like by Roger Greenspan for the New York Times,
I thought you were going to say Ebert, and I was like, there's no way Ebert likes this movie.
For sure.
No?
Yeah, sorry.
I wouldn't have had trouble pronouncing Ebert's name.
I thought maybe you were choked up.
Ebert? Yeah. He has this line that sort of captures some of what I was getting at before. He says, quote, both Thor and Stein are about to become writers, a professional status that the movie accepts without comment. It's kind of like what I mean by the way in which this film is, you know, like a first world problems film, but that also sort of pokes fun at itself for being that. Like, guys standing around talking about, like, how they're going to become great writers instead of doing anything like most of the film, as opposed to last year at Marion Bad, which drives me crazy, which has like this like long chess game that's supposed to be this huge like metaphorical symbolism or whatever, and it's taken like 100% seriously the whole time. Yeah. And I'm not saying that like this film doesn't take itself seriously, it's just that I feel like it understands the place of these people's complaints,
yeah,
and the greater scope of things.
I also thought it was funny the like weird sort of, they mentioned it a couple times, the pressure to be like smart intellectuals, like they're part of a class, so they should be. And so two different characters, Thor and Elizabeth, at certain points refer to the fact that sometimes they sit with a book and just pretend that they're reading so that people will, like, see them and think that, like, they're doing something smart with themselves.
That's a funny idea.
They pick
idea.
Up her novel.
I wish it had been presented in a more digestible context, because I would have gotten that joke, probably. But as it is, it's just kind of buried in all this other stuff, and I'm just like, I wasn't able
to catch nearly as much of the what was going on in the dialogue as Basil.
Well, they picked
was just because so much of it is sort of intentionally interesting sounding non sequiturs, like the title itself. It's just like things that sound sensical. It's hard to keep up with them because they don't actually make any sense.
It reminds me of this this art piece that I actually worked on with this artist named Kim Schoen, where she basically has these guys who are kind of like announcer types, and they're talking like they're doing a TED talk, but all the things that they're saying just make no sense. You know, they're just like saying like these really like official sounding phrases, but they don't really mean anything. It's like, oh, when banks compete, you win. Like, what does that mean? Like, I don't think that that's true at all.
Yeah, I think that this movie would be a lot easier to get at if I spoke French or if it was in English, I think. The fact that it's sort of like just super talky and also in a language that I don't understand makes the kind of what Ruben was saying, the non sequiturs, like harder to put together, that it's all adding up to nothing on purpose. Like, so much of the movie, this is one thing I wrote down, is just people gossiping about people who aren't on screen, or sometimes about people who are on screen, like they're not there, and like it's just like every conversation is not about what's going on in the moment, but just like about other people, or I saw them say, or they said this thing, and it's, I don't know, sometimes that worked for me. It did feel a little bit like if the movie was 45 minutes, it could have accomplished the same thing, but shorter.
Yeah, this and, might have made a more interesting short, actually, now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. Probably could have stayed engaged in it a lot more. Could have been compressed a bit.
What were you going to say, Ruben?
Yeah, I was just going to add to your points. And like you said, it sometimes a bit on the nose. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it still kind of worked. Like, I remember a scene sort of similar to what you're saying, where, like, Thor and Stein are standing there, and I think they're not even looking at his wife, Alyssa. And she's got that pained, anxious look that both of the women have for most of the film. Right. And they're just kind of talking about her, like she's not there. As, you know, just sort of like a general comment about how men, like, protect women, but also are, like, completely unaware of what, like, who they actually are, in a way. I like that moment.
Yeah. Another one that was sort of, that made me laugh and that I wrote down because of that, which is somewhat similar, like, the idea of, I think this is kind of getting at the idea of, like, the sort of, like, self-actualization thing that was coming, where Alyssa's talking to Elizabeth when they're, like, hanging out in the field, and she's laying down, and Alyssa's trying to encourage her and be like, do as you like, and then Elizabeth says, I don't want to.
I thought it was funny when they actually finally got to sort of the eponymous sort of line when they're like, oh, she said destroy, and I was kind of waiting. I was like, oh, here we go. We're going to finally find out what this movie's about. Nope. Nope. Not at all. It'd be like in Star Wars or something, if Han Solo put his hands on his hips and was like, I've had it up to here with your Star Wars. Or something. It just, it meant nothing. It meant nothing when she said it. Like, I don't know. Like, so I don't know.
Part of the problem that I have with this movie was I felt like the way it was shot was also kind of, I don't know, distracting from the conversation sometimes. During that last scene where the woman's husband shows up, they're shooting it and he's sitting on one side of the table, and then they cut and it looks like he's on a different side of the table, but it's just because they crossed the line in cutting. So I was like, wait a second, wasn't he sitting over there? What's he doing? And then I'm just like, and then I've completely lost the thread of what he's saying, and I'm just like, this is not okay. I don't know. I felt like the movie did that a couple of times. It was just like a technical thing would start bothering me, and I would get distracted from the conversation, and I was like, ugh, I just don't have the patience to sit here and listen to you. You're just so you're so unpleasant to look at. I don't know. I guess I'm pretty shallow in that way.
Did you guys notice that Stein was the guy from Munich?
No, I didn't notice that.
Which guy from Munich? There's a lot of guys in Munich.
Well, the guy that would be age appropriate for being, he's like the French cook guy who like invites Eric Bana over to his house and gives a big long speech and cooks a big meal with his family, and everyone calls him Papa. He's got like a beard and long hair that's white. He talks about how his hands were too small to be a professional cook, but that's what he wanted to be. Anyway, that was him. It took me about half the movie to be like, I know this guy, but what do I know him from? It turns out he's been in like 230 movies, so you've probably seen something else of him.
Quite prolific, but prolific.
I thought he kind of looked like Matthew Berry from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, Dr. Sanchez, but that was kind of distracting for me for a little while.
Thor is the guy who owns the shoe shop in Stolen Kisses, if you've seen Stolen Kisses.
I have, but I don't remember that part, actually. I don't remember that movie that well. I should rewatch it.
I can barely remember any of the characters in this movie. Like, I can barely remember what they look like at this point.
Well, I'll describe cool. Stolen Kisses for Basil.
Yes, let's describe what they look like in a podcast. That will be very interesting for the audience.
No, this is, I'm describing something different.
Oh, something different, okay.
But equally awesome.
Antoine Joandel is like working for like a detective agency,
mm-hmm.
and he owns a shoe shop and someone's stealing from him, and so he fake hires Antoine
to
work there, and his wife is Delphine Seyrig in the film,
and then they start having sex or something, right?
Yeah,
I do remember that now. Thanks for the refresher.
Interesting note, Delphine Seyrig, star of India Song, directed by Marguerite Duras, which gets a strong recommendation from me. If you guys want to watch more of non sequiturs and people not doing anything in like an old dilapidated house.
As long as it's lit better than this movie.
I believe it is. Natalie Granger is probably the nicest looking of the three, though. That might have just been the copy that I got.
Yeah, this. I mean, at least some of this seemed like that the it was taken from a pretty old print. It might have even been shot on, well, I don't know. I don't know when 16mm was invented, but it definitely seemed like not super high stock film. Sort of like yeah, I super mean,
maybe
graininess.
Maybe that was the problem. Maybe it just wasn't kept up very well. Maybe it faded or something like that. Maybe it did originally have better lighting.
Or maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
The lighting didn't.
I'd lean more toward probably not, since it's her first film. Maybe they didn't expose it right or something. I don't know. Film is difficult to shoot, as far as I know.
She wasn't the director of photography, though. Someone else.
That's true.
And it's not like she was working.
She probably wasn't working with the biggest names at that point, too. She probably wasn't working with the most professional shooters at that point, too. You do your first film, it's usually.
But she was like super famous already.
Yeah. She's a really successful novelist and playwright before she ever directed a film.
So, yeah, but those are kind of separate worlds too, like the film world and the theater.
And she fairly consistently gets like pretty big name actors for her like little indie projects.
Yeah, well,
like
actors.
Jean Moreau.
Yeah, actors would cross over. I think in that case, like if you know,
more
if
than
you're,
DPs.
If you're a writer, like an actor could be, you know, like a very prominent, you know, theater actor as well. And they'd be like, oh, I've done these person's plays. I know them. I want to, you know, be in the movie of them or whatever. But as far as film crews go, it's like a different group of people, like knowing those people. So, but I mean, it's quite possible that they were like, oh, okay, she's, you know, got some cachet with these actors, got some hire, you know, like some bigger name people to work on the technical end as opposed to the, I guess, the creative end, which is the writing and the acting and the directing. So it's entirely possible that they're, you know, she just upped the upped the technical work on the film as she got, you know, more and more experience directing. And once you have a feature under your belt, obviously you can say, oh, look, I've done this feature. And then, you know, it's like, oh, the world kind of opens up and all the technical people are like, yeah, I trust that you know what you're doing a little bit since you've done this before. Yeah, I have nothing else to say about this movie.
Michael?
I don't know. I don't really have a lot to say about this movie either. I was just kind of, thought it was kind of weird, all the Jew references. It was kind of like...
Those Jew references.
And the first one comes, like, within the first, like, 30 seconds or so. I was like, okay... one of those kind of movies, maybe. Well,
I mean, she also wrote Hiroshima More and More, so I don't think that she's like
an anti-Semite. No, I didn't know that beforehand, but in retrospect I was, but it, at first I was just kind of like, oh, okay, this is getting weird already.
I've seen Hiroshima Mon Amour, and I liked it better than this one, but I also did not like it that much. So, which is weird, because I thought from the premise, I was like, oh, okay, I'm really going to like this. And I started out liking it, but as it went along, I didn't like it as much. Well, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I did read that was also her story.
I had a similar reaction to Hiroshima Mon Amour, but I liked the beginning so much that I still liked the film overall. But I would say that's probably her most accessible, if people want to give her another try.
Yeah,
she didn't direct it. But
I haven't seen it in a really long time. I remember having the same reaction that both of you are talking about, but I haven't seen it in like a decade, so I'd probably watch it again. Like, and also last year at Marianne Bad at some point, since everyone
talks about
that
movie. That
doesn't
have anything to do with her, though, I don't think.
No, I know. I was just thinking about Renee and giving him another shot.
I googled it. I couldn't find any connection. So, my bad.
Secret googling.
Yeah, I picked that up from a review I read somewhere about this movie. They were, like, talking about the other films that she had been involved in writing and stuff like that. I can't remember which one it is, though. So I'm of no help whatsoever in that department. Sorry. I'm of no help to anyone today.
Yeah. Get off of this podcast.
Bye, see you guys later. Nothing else to add.
I don't know. Maybe I'll give this movie another chance at some point. I did not like it, but I still thought, like, I did. Especially in the context of her other stuff, that she's got, like, some pretty interesting things to say. And maybe it would just be more fun to, like, read the play as opposed to watch the movie and just try to, like, swallow her words, since they're the most important part.
Swallow her words and taste her thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like the first phrase is a more common one.
That's a Lil Wayne lyric.
Two equally well-renowned workers of language, Marguerite Duras and Lil Wayne. Because I, you know, I definitely had a lot of difficulty sort of, like, keeping up with what people were saying, and it all would sort of blend together, and,
yeah. I wondered if it would be more interesting as a play, but I don't know if, I think what you were saying about just reading it as a play, and that way giving yourself time to go back, because people do talk pretty quickly, and because of the way that things don't move in the way that you expect conversations to, it's pretty hard to
There usually aren't subtitles during a play either.
That's true. That'll be
sometimes there are.
Yeah, I went to an opera once where they like projected the words to all the lyrics on the bottom of the play the bottom.
I don't know how I feel about that. That sounds kind of cheap.
It looked nice. It was, and I don't know. I mean, they can't translate the opera.
Yeah, it's true. But I'm just picturing like a big, like I know this isn't you guys' experience, but whenever you would go to like youth conventions, they would have like a big praise and worship session. They would just have a big projector up behind the people that are singing.
Oh yeah,
and just project the words of the song so that everybody could sing along to it. And that's what I'm picturing, like an opera, but with that.
That would be pretty amazing, but it wasn't that. But also, you assume too much because I've been to church probably hundreds of times.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, my dad's side of the family is super religious. I didn't like grow up super religious because I was raised by my mom. But whenever I went to visit my dad, which was for a while, like almost every weekend and during the summer and stuff, I would go to church with him and my grandparents. So I'm very aware of what you're referring to. But no, this was like there was the stage, and then much like subtitles in a film, they worked out a kind of like projection system where like at the bottom of the stage below all the actors was where the words would appear, so it's pretty unobtrusive.
as opposed to
overhead projector where they flip out the thing.
Somebody's just sliding the sheet up. It's just like one of those cheap like, transparency projectors.
Notes in your 8th grade algebra class.
Yeah.
That's definitely what it was like when I first started going to church when I was a little kid. It was like someone would be there and like pull it off and put the other one on.
They didn't
sometimes
even.
Sometimes it'd be the wrong one.
They couldn't spring for one of those ones where you just sort of like roll it up.
Oh, that's true. No.
Yeah.
Those ones were terrible. I hated those.
Oh my god.
They were always messing up and like the marker would like smudge and stuff you would rolled up on one side.
Yeah.
And then she was like redrawing like the shapes and stuff, and I was like, just don't use that. And that's the worst.
Oh my god. I have such bad memories of that shit. That was just the worst in school. Just sitting there watching a teacher like drawing on a transparency and then like wiping it away and like spray like that spray stuff that they had to wipe it away. Like, just oh my god. School's the worst.
What I was gonna say before we started talking about all of this, and it's only really tinily relevant, is that I read Waiting for Godot in French. I'm not like fluent in French, so I read it very slowly and with like a dictionary by my side, but it was kind of an enjoyable experience, and it did force me to like consider sort of every word in a way in which watching a movie or reading it in English translation wouldn't.
Yeah, I tried. The only time a thing I tried to read was like comic books when I was trying to learn French, and I feel like that's not exactly that conducive, because even when I'm reading comic books in English, I don't pay that much attention to the words. I'm just like, picture, new picture, new picture.
Well, I have a friend whose first language is Chinese. He learned all his English by watching The Simpsons, so I mean, it can't be done.
There you go. That's where you go to learn English.
Yeah, I think I watched that French episode of The Simpsons like 3 different times in French classes. My professors kept showing the one where Bart goes to France.
Paints a really nice picture of France.
Waiting for Godot, by the way, just makes extra sense because the French writer of it wrote it in English because he wanted to restrict his own like vocabulary. So it's a play that is written by someone and not their native language. And so whenever you read it like it's just, it's very pared down in a way.
That makes sense.
That is, yeah. That just makes sense now. More.
Did it make the waiting even more difficult?
Because it. There's even more waiting when you read it in not your native language.
Waiting for myself to figure out what this word is from this dictionary.
Oh, it's waiting.
Oh, that's it. Waiting. Four. This is the second word. Oh, wait, this is the title page.
Alright, guys. Any more Destroy She Said or jokes?
Or jokes about Destroy She Said?
Or any type of jokes. Yeah, anyone got really any good jokes?
No. I haven't heard any good jokes lately.
I'm out of jokes at this point.
No jokes.
I got no jokes.
I don't think we said like a lot during this podcast, so maybe Ilya's mom can listen to it, because apparently she stopped listening to it, because we say like too much.
Well, that's good. We're improving our vocabulary skills.
Next time, Clueless.
As if.
I love Clueless.
Yeah, Clueless is pretty amazing. If I didn't feel like we had already talked an enormous amount just in regular life about Clueless, I would say doing a podcast on it would be pretty great.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe on iTunes and give us 5 stars and write a nice review and whatnot. And we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
So long.
No, that's not how you're supposed to sign off.
Oh no.
What are you doing?
You ruined everything.
Oh no.
So long. What is that shit? All
right. Destroy she said. Hold on. Sorry. Let me look up the year.
69, dude.
Lol. Lulz. Destroy She Said, 1969.